This is Dr. Cannell of the Vitamin D Council. Today I'm going to do a video blog because it's one of those days. We have a very interesting paper by Dr. Wimala Wanta, who's a professor of endocrinology at the Robert Wood Johnson Medical School in New Jersey. And he starts this paper with a remarkable statement. He says, quote, "The incidence of vitamin D deficiency is rising worldwide, yet the vast majority of patients, the condition remains undiagnosed and untreated." That's a remarkable statement. And he goes on to say, quote, "Vitamin D deficiency is one of the most common and underdiagnosed medical conditions in the world." Now, this professor is also writing a book, has written a book for primary care physicians and how to use vitamin D in treatment of vitamin D deficiency and other conditions for primary care physicians. I haven't seen a copy of this book, but I'm very glad to see that kind of book come out. There are, of course, textbooks on vitamin D, but I'm not aware of any book for primary care physicians on how to treat vitamin D deficiency. Dr. Professor Wimala Wanta goes on to talk about virtually all the diseases of civilization, that all of them have evidence of involvement of vitamin D deficiency, every one of them. It's just remarkable. You can't really find a disease of civilization that vitamin D deficiency isn't thought to play some role in. Certainly clear that what role that is not known at this time. No one is saying that it's 100% vitamin D deficiency and that 100% treatment of vitamin D deficiency will prevent all these diseases. No one I know says that, although some may privately hope that to be true. No one thinks it's true. Professor Wimala Wanta goes on to say that there's been a dramatic decrease in vitamin D levels from the 1990s to the mid-2000s. So this trip that we're taking out of the sun started a couple hundred years ago when we started working indoors. This trip is not completed. We're in the process of completing this trip, and we're still going inside because of Nintendo and video games, because of the sun scare, because of the use of sunblock. We're quote, protecting ourselves, end quote, from photons of ultraviolet light. And the result is that the vitamin D deficiency epidemic is worsening. It's not staying stable. It's worsening over time. He goes on to talk about clinical symptoms of vitamin D deficiency, and that's important. We don't talk about that too often, but in the history, you can get some idea of patients if you're vitamin D deficient, because people often have weakness. They often just have a blah. They feel like something's just quite not right with them. They often will have notice that it's more difficult to climb up stairs than it used to be. If you ask them closely, they'll notice a difference between the summer and the winter in terms of their muscle strength. There's a test you can do as a physician or as a layperson. It's easy enough to do. You just make a fist, and then you get a knuckle. If you look at this knuckle, you'll see. And then you take that, and you push that against the breastbone or the sternum of the person you're interested in. Now, you can't go all the way back against the chair, so the person can't move. The person needs to be sitting up in a chair. So you push them in, and you should be able to apply a considerable amount of force without any pain. For example, I'm pushing pretty hard right now, and that doesn't hurt. I mean, it doesn't feel good, but it doesn't hurt. In probably the majority of the people in this country, that would hurt. And that's just considered normal. It's not normal. It's osteomalacia, and that's adult rickets. It's inflammation between the bone and the cartilaginous cover of the bone, and that inflammation goes away with adequate vitamin D treatment. The other symptoms are generalized pains, headaches are not uncommon, muscle aches, inability to lose weight is a common symptom of vitamin D deficiency. People have tried all kinds of different diets, and they stay on the diet, but they just swear they can't lose weight, and you put them on 5 or 10,000 units of vitamin D a day, and you keep them on that for several months, and then you have them diet again, and lo and behold, their diet works. And there are studies that support that, several of them, as a matter of fact. The neuromuscular aspect of vitamin D deficiency is probably the single most important aspect of vitamin D deficiency in terms of diagnosis, which is one of the reasons that the book I wrote, and I'm going to put a plug in here for my book, the book I wrote has to do with the neuromuscular system. Now, you can only get the book in one way. You can't get it on Amazon yet, and we're not going to put it on Amazon for probably a year or so. You have to Google one word, and it's a long word, but it's vitamin D sports book. Okay? Just Google vitamin D sports book, and you'll come to the website where you can buy the book. And it's really for, although it talks about athletics and athletes, that's only as 2 or 3 chapters in the book. The other 10, 15 chapters in the book have to do with all aspects of vitamin D, by not only just vitamin D deficiency, but how you treat vitamin D deficiency, how you maintain so it doesn't reoccur, all the symptoms of vitamin D deficiency, all the diseases that and the evidence that vitamin D is involved in them, et cetera. So it's really a book for anybody with a neuromuscular system themselves. And again, that's a vitamin D sports book. Just Google that one word. Professor Wimelawanso then goes on to talk about the importance of not giving it vitamin D too far apart. These trials where they give it every year or every 6 months are to be condemned. In fact, I believe that every month is too short a time period unless the person has a significant level to begin with, or you build up a significant level. But 50,000 units every month sounds like a lot. It's not. It's one and a quarter milligrams of vitamin D every month. It's not very much at all. And it doesn't work. It's not simple math. You don't just divide 50,000 units by 30 to figure out how much you're getting every day. It doesn't work like that. When you take vitamin D as a bolus, some of it is simply destroyed by the liver and excreted in the urine unchanged or in castletroic acid. So taking it as a bolus or a SAS dose, a large single dose, is not the same as taking it daily. Our forefathers, our relatives in equatorial Africa got vitamin D every day. They didn't get it every week or every month. They got it every day. And I am afraid that all these trials that are coming out now showing whether they show an effect or not of giving vitamin D every month, these are all going to have to be repeated to see what the effect size is, because that is not a natural way to give vitamin D. Professor Wimelawanso goes on to talk about the calcium controversy. You know, the government recommends up to 1,300 milligrams of calcium for teenagers and up to 1,200 milligrams of calcium for older people, and more people think that's a potentially toxic dose. You have to remember that the calcium recommendations that were given for calcium supplementation or for total calcium intake were given for vitamin D deficient people, basically. They when these recommendations were all formulated, it was formulated for a group of people that, unbeknownst to the researchers, were vitamin D deficient. Vitamin D increases calcium absorption, active calcium absorption, so I think it's unlikely that anybody needs to supplement it with over 500 milligrams of calcium. The Vitamin D Council recommends that dairy products be consumed on a regular basis. If you don't like milk, you can have yogurt, you can have hard cheeses, etc. But the calcium content of dairy products is very well absorbed, better than calcium supplements. The people at risk of vitamin D deficiency is just about everybody. If you work indoors, you're at risk. If you live in the northern half of the United States, you're at risk. Unless you have an outdoor occupation where you spend considerable amounts of time outdoors with your shirt off or in shorts and a tank top or something, you're going to be vitamin D deficient. So unless you're a lifeguard or a roofer or a gardener or something like that, you're going to be vitamin D deficient at least sometime during the year. One other thing that Professor Wimelawanso points out as an experienced clinician is that, remember, that non-adherence to therapy is a common cause of vitamin D levels not going up. You say, okay, I want you to take 5,000 units of vitamin D a day. People will come in and they'll swear they're taking it and they're not taking it. And that happens. It happens more often than we like to think about it. It's very hard to know when the case is, and it's one of the reasons to have somebody come back every week, for example, and give them a 50,000 unit capsule. You know, you can get 50,000 unit capsules for your office from Biotech Pharmacal. Just to Google that, Biotech Pharmacal. Now, in my opinion, 50,000 unit capsules should be prescription only. They should not be available to lay. And I know a lot of people disagree with my position on this, but you can get in trouble with 50,000 units of capsules of vitamin D, and you need to know what you're doing. Professor Wimelawanso talks also about what's called vitamin D hypersensitivity, and it's worth reminding ourselves that there are some rare conditions where serum blood calcium will go up in spite of a normal or mildly elevated vitamin D level, and those conditions are sarcoidosis, primary hyperparathyroidism, granulomatous tuberculosis, and also metastatic bone disease. So think of those situations if you have a normal vitamin D level but you have elevated calcium. Also, if you have a normal vitamin D level and elevated calcium, that's one of the rare indications to get a 125 dihydroxy vitamin D level. One thing I like as Dr. Wimelawanso finishes his paper is he talks about the need for food fortification. And currently, food fortification in the United States is 80% of it is delivered via milk, fortified milk. That's a product, a food that African Americans can or won't consume often. So it's ironic, and it makes me angry to think that the group that needs it the most, the one group that needs vitamin D the most, has a food that they can't or won't consume. And that's been the state in the United States for decades now. food fortification needs to be widespread, and it needs to be in various foods. Like yesterday, an olive oil manufacturer came out and announced they're going to start adding vitamin D to olive oil. In the 1930s, one of the beers actually added vitamin D to the beers. No reason they can't do that again. You can add vitamin D to bread and make it fortified bread and other grain products. You can add it to fermented cheeses or hard cheeses, not the fake American cheese, but real cheese, because African Americans consume real cheese at the same rate that the white Americans consume real cheese. But food fortification has got to be one of the main vehicles by which we solve this problem, because there are hundreds of millions of Americans who will not take a supplement. They will not go into the sun. And if you don't take a supplement and you don't go into the sun, you've got a 100% chance of being vitamin D deficient. That's the reality of it. So food fortification, wide variety of foods, and higher amounts of fortification than exists now. Right? For example, right now it's only 5 micrograms of vitamin D in a glass of milk, 100 international units. That's just not enough. It's better than nothing. But there should be 400 micrograms of vitamin D in a serving of cheese. There should be 400 micrograms in a serving of bread. These sorts of dosages of food fortification would do a world of good. And I'd like to compliment Professor Wimmo Wanza for an excellent paper, and also for I can't wait to see his book, the first of its kind to come out, a book for primary care physicians on how to diagnose and treat vitamin D deficiency and to use vitamin D in general and family practice.